You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management, archaeology, and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the CRM Archaeological Podcast, episode 331. That's a lot of 100. Anyway, today, I, Andrew Kinkella, am your host, coming at you from sunny, as almost always, Southern California. And with me, I have two fabulous guests. Fabulous guest number one, Renee. Say hello to the crowd.
Hello, everyone. It is not sunny here. It is raining.
And where is here? All right. So you're back. Are you back home in Colorado?
Yes, I am.
Oh, awesome. Good for you. And then fabulous guest number two, Doug. Doug, say hello to the crowd.
Hello to the crowd.
Always, you know, always just right in my side. Just a thorn. I'm looking for the thorn in my side. There it is.
It's always that one person. And you know, I have to be him.
Exactly. You're like, I will play that role. I will put that hat on. So this is cool. It's just the three of us today. Heather and Bill could not make it. And we thought we would talk about our failures. This is something that has sort of been swarming around my brain because, you know, I think that for all of us really on this podcast, people listening to it might think that we are just these shining successes, that everything turns our way, you know, and that we've just climbed the mountain of success and there's been no hindrances. And I know that for myself personally, that is very much not true. So I thought we could just go through the day and talk about, you know, with an angle towards CRM archaeology and archaeology in general, what are some of our failures? You know, are there certain jobs we went out for that we just totally didn't get? Were there certain projects that we were going to work on or work with other people that we got kicked out of? Were there times that we got fired, you know, and just, it can be really tough, right? These experiences. And so not only, as you will see, I'm sure all of us here and all of us listening have had failures, but also, you know, the journey towards crawling out of like the deep well, often of hopelessness, you know, that you feel, especially in that moment. So I thought we could just go through this kind of stuff, and I'm sure we'll have several different examples. At first, I just like to open it up to my two other co-hosts. Do you guys have any failures for yourself that you would want to start off with?
Oh, Andrew, well played, man. Well played to like start it off and then kick it away from yourself. And
I know. Ball, man. I know. You see that? I'm smooth.
Yeah. Oh, man. Man, I don't know. There's a lot.
Exactly. Just that reaction.
I would like to start.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like when you, so I don't know, it depends. When you get to a certain level, like you're batting like baseball batting averages, like, yeah. You know, like when you move up to like project manager and when you start putting in like tenders, or if you're in the nonprofit and you're putting in for like grants, and,
oh, yeah.
Or if you're an academic and putting in for grants, like, man, I don't know. If you're batting like 200, so if you don't know baseball, that's like 2 out of 8 or 2 out of 10. Like, that is a pretty damn good batting average for various things. I've seen people who are like, oh, you know, we get like half the tenders we go for. I was like, no, you don't. That's not something that's like physically possible unless you're in a very small niche and like you're the only person who can do it. And yeah, you might be able to pull it off. But like, yeah, I don't know. Once you hit a certain level in your career, like, oof, man, you have more failures than you have successes by
easily
far.
Yeah. It's not even close. I'll get, you know, I'm just like you. What I thought was funny is you started this by going like, oh, there's just so many. That's my problem. That was one of the reasons I was going to throw it to you guys. I'm like, where do I start? I'll give you one. I joke a lot of times about like my media empire, you know, because I'm like my YouTube channel and these podcasts and stuff. And I also do these television appearances from time to time. You know, it really works out to like a handful of days per year, you know, that I work on these things and I really enjoy, be it for the Discovery Channel or the History Channel or, you know, right, whatever it is. But oh my God, you guys, you don't see how many jobs I get denied for. It's like hilarious. Talk about a 200 batting average. I don't have I probably have a 0.05 batting average, like a 1 in 20, you know, in terms of when a production company gets in touch with me to do I actually get a job in front of some sort of television situation. I mean, you have to be able to take rejection. You know, it's constant. And I've been rejected at every level in the media world, meaning anywhere from somebody will call me for a show and just never call back, all the way towards I take 2 Zoom meetings. I see them in person. They film a zip reel of me, which is called like, it's like a commercial for yourself. You know, they film me for a few minutes. They go back. They talk to the president, whatever. And I still don't get it. Right. I've had so dozens of those at this point. So at this point, if I see myself in some sort of television role, I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, that one worked. Right. You know, it's that world, that media is just a world of failure. It's just failure. You know, it's failure with a fun moment if it happens to be a success.
You get to learn from those situations. They tell you why.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, what's their, like, when you inquire about why did I fail, do they tell you what you could have done better? Or it's like, they just like ghost you.
Oh, no, they just ghost you. I was going to say more in general. This sounds so Pollyanna and so like cliche, but I do find these to be total learning experiences. And I've been much better at that as I get older. Like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it would have been, and we'll get into, I have a bunch of academic failures too. They would have been much more soul crushing. You know, now I really can see it as a learning experience. And I really do learn, but I learn in the Monday morning quarterback style, you know, Renee, they never tell me like, oh, you could have gotten this job, but you just need to do this. Nope, they just ghost. Like, and they ghost at any point, right? They ghost when you're invested in it. They ghost and you'll never hear from them. It's just the deal. They never tell you.
That's harsh.
Yeah, but you just deal, see? Yeah.
To be honest, though, like, so I'm thinking about like maybe a week or two ago, I got contacted from a grant we had applied for and we didn't get it. And they were like, oh, can you provide us feedback on they're going to redo their system and stuff like that. It was actually really cool. Like the grant's like, yeah, we always guarantee we're going to send you guys some feedback on application and stuff like that. And that's great because, you know, a lot of times you don't get anything and you get no feedback. Like, yeah, you get ghosted a lot. Sometimes if they're required to like tell you not getting anything, they'll send like a one, maybe they'll fluff it out to like 3 sentence email about like, oh, we had a great, it was such a hard choice, yada, yada, but you know, you suck, so you didn't get it. It's what it feels like. But honestly, I've also been on the other side of it, and I'll bring it back to it. It's like the feedback I gave to this organization was like, yeah, it was nice to get that feedback, but honestly, it felt fairly forced. Like it was like this very generic, and like, honestly, they're like, oh, you know, if you just give us more detail here, it's like, dude, it was 500 words. There's not much more you could really do with that. Yeah. I the feedback I gave them was like, sometimes you can just say like, there's nothing you could have done. There was just other candidates that were better, which is a
yes.
That's a good response. That's a good response.
It really hurts like to hear that. But sometimes it is true. It's like there is nothing you could have done. Like you were perfect. We had like 10 perfect ones and we went with this other one. Or like, you know, a lot of it comes down to subjective, like be it a job, be it a grant, maybe not so much tenders because, you know, some of that goes into price and stuff like that. But even then, a lot of time it's, you know, it's not necessarily anything you've done. It's like the feels basically in air quotes of like, they're like, we kind of like this person better. They spoke to us more. It was their language. And there's not much you can do to change yourself unless you completely change yourself. And totally. So, yeah, sometimes that feedback, I wish more people would just be like, yeah, guys, like we had 200 applicants. There's not anything you could have done, like improved next time. You just, you know, the other guy had a Nobel Prize. Like, are you going to beat that? No. So like, I don't know.
No, I totally agree. That's been my experience totally with the grant world. I've barely gotten any grants in my career. I'm terrible at them. There's been certain grants where I thought it had my name on it. It might as well have been called the Andrew Kinkella Memorial Grant for Andrew Kinkella. And I'm like, I'm going to get this. And I applied. And I thought my application was good and I didn't get it. You know, I'm like, how in the hell did I not get this thing? But on the flip side, once or twice, I've gotten grants. And again, most grants, you guys, I have not gotten. I'm terrible at them. I would say 90% of grants I've tried for, I have been unsuccessful. So, but I got one once or twice that I felt like I was an outsider. So, I mean, based on what Doug is saying, my point is, when in doubt, just apply, because the granting people sometimes don't know exactly what they want. It is the feels. They're like, oh, this is good. We haven't thought of this, you know, so just go for it when in doubt.
And the same thing in the CRM world when applying for jobs too. Right. Like I see on the, being back in the day when I applied for things and I see on the other side now having, you know, I'm part of that whole hiring process now.
Right.
It's like, all right, well, I'm applying to like a bombarded, you know, just throw out my CV everywhere. And, you know, I never got an answer back or whatever. It's like, you know, I throw out 10 applications. If I hear one like response back, I think that's a win personally, but I try not to like hold a grudge against anything. But sometimes because I like knowing why I didn't get, you know, the job, I send out an email like, hey, just like following up, what's going on? Like, is everything okay? And sometimes they'll say, well, we went with another person. They have more experience. That's fair. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. And now seeing it on the hiring side too, it's like, okay, I get it. There's like 20 people applying and you have to go with, as Doug was saying, like their interview was great. They're a great person. Like you could just like, I won't go on the holistic side of it, but it's just that feeling that you get from that person. It's like, oh, we really connected really well with them. We like them. So it's like, sometimes you just go with your gut feeling, I guess. But it's like you have 20 other people, but you connect with one other person. It's not you. It's just how that person interviewed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird that you're saying like you guys are also throwing out numbers that like I experienced as well. Like Andrew, and you're like, it's at like 5%.
Yeah.
Literally maybe again, like 2 weeks ago or maybe a week and a half ago, I sent out an email on like, you know, we're a small charity, you know, it's a projected sort of budget sort of thing. And it's like, yeah, so we've applied for all these projects. I'm putting it at 5%. Is like that we'll get any of them or anything like that. So don't like count on any of this money ever. Mm-hmm. But I literally use that 5%. And Renee, also similar, like, so, all right, now I'm pretty much working for myself. It's a little bit more complicated than it's a charity, but basically set it up and, you know, self-employed with social benefit sort of side of things. But like before that, my last, like applying for a job, I think, yeah, it was a very similar ratio that I had was like, I think I'd put out something like 50 applications, got like 2 interviews and 1 job.
Right.
And that's pretty much fairly similar, like in times past, fairly similar numbers that I get. It sucks because like, I don't just send out like a generic CV. Like I tailor all of my CV. Ooh.
Totally.
When we come back from the break, I have a great story of failure on like an absolute shit show of an application and stuff like that. A great story. That's a good one.
Oh, wait, okay. So on that note, dude, let's wrap it up here because I can think of stuff that like that too. When we come back, we'll talk about tailoring our CVs and the shit show that follows. We'll be back in a second. Hello, and welcome back to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 331. And we are talking about what huge failures we all are. And I just wanted to start with a very short aspect of this, which is the tough part with applying to all these jobs is that you have to tailor and focus to each one like it's life and death, like you really want it, because that's the gig, right? So many of the media things, you know, I'll have to take meetings or Zooms where I have to be ready and prepped about this new job, whatever it is, that I have a 5% chance of getting. So there's lots of work behind the scenes that is absolutely unpaid, you know, and burns hours to get ready for an interview where you have basically dismal percentages of success. And with that, Doug, do you have a scintillating story?
So like, it's that level of detail I want to go into this, because people will probably be able to figure out some of the people involved. Archaeology is small enough. So this is actually an archaeology experience. So like at the end, I was like, I shouldn't have done it, but I still did, but I knew it was not going to happen, but we'll get to that. So I had a former colleague get a job in a very high paying project, just to throw it out there. It would have been in Saudi, where they just throw ridiculous amounts of money at people. And so she's like, oh, there's this position. It was a weird mixture, but not too far off. It was a bit of overseeing. So you'd bring in, you know, you'd be basically a consultant. So you'd bring in other archaeology firms to do the work and sort of oversee them. But also there was like a component for like GIS and web development and stuff like that, which is not usually a combination that you get. And I was like, oh, hey, I got both of those skills. And so I went through, this was a big engineering project. So it wasn't through archaeologists. So you applied to this other route, which was like headhunters, and they had quote unquote AI look at your CV and if they'd get back to you. And I tailored it. Like I went through, and when I tailor, I'm like, so here's my job. And then I literally pull out like one of the person specifications or one of the experience you required or knowledge or whatever. I'm like, and this is exactly an excruciating detail. It's not excruciating detail because, yeah, I keep it short. But like I really make it like as foolproof as I possibly can to be like, yes. And in my experience, you can see here and here how I exactly meet all these qualifications. And so I did that. I ended up talking to the recruiter. He's like, yeah, probably because I did that and repeated some of the phrases in there, I got flagged as a good for the system. So I went through, and the first interview I had was with this archaeologist, and it was a bit awkward and weird. I couldn't quite put my hand on it at the time. But then it went to like the group stage, and it was one of those like you sort of get dropped in, you feel like you got ambushed. It was just because they were just so disorganized. But like, so I'm going in there, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to really play up the GIS aspect and the, you know, my web development and all that stuff. And one of the people on the panel was someone they'd hired just a week before to do that half of the job. And like, so like I'd come in there and I'd like tailored everything and I'd practiced my thing. And like the interview was not the greatest, just because it was like, well, I now have to redo all my answers for like half of the project and stuff like that. And then, like, you know, I didn't hear something for a little while, and I heard back from the recruiter, and they're like, oh yeah, we need you to redo your CV. I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, it's too tailored. We need you to just do a generic one. Oh. And this is where I had that feeling. I was like, yeah, I don't have the job. I shouldn't do it. But still part of me was like hoping. So I redid the CV to be generic. And then, yeah, they came back and they're like, no, you didn't get the job. I was like, oh man. But it was one of those like, so much work to tailor the CV and then so much work to untailor it, and just failed all the way through.
Right.
They wasted your time though. Oh my God.
I know. Oh, I can
feel it.
They could
have just told you.
Yeah. The problem is they didn't actually, like, they didn't know. Like they'd hired an archaeologist, as far as I could tell, was a relatively newish, like, last 10 years PhD, mainly had done more academic projects, and as far as I could tell, didn't really do management or anything like that. And actually the person, my former colleague who was there, she had a very similar experience, only she got the job, she then showed up there, and they're like, yeah, actually someone else is going to be doing that work.
Oh my God.
And so like she took a lot of good money right. for like a couple of months, but then like, yeah, like they did not know. They were constantly changing. Like they changed the person. Like, so after that second interview, they like sent me the new person spec and they're like, yeah, so we've changed the person spec for this job. And can you just give us a generic CV for that? I'm like, what? It was so frustrating because also it was a absolutely ridiculous amount of money if I could have gotten it. So that's the part, that's the only reason like I basically debased myself and was like,
I forgot the money part for a second. I was like, why did you keep going on this?
We were talking like, you know, 100 and well, with like benefits, which were ridiculous, like places to stay and then mm-hmm. like reallocation and then money for your kids to go to school. And yeah, like we're talking like 150,000 pounds, which just to put you at like that time would have been like 200 some grand.
Sure.
That's also, nice.
But like, so that wasn't even counting in like the free place to stay and the free food. So, but and it was all tax free.
Yeah. That sounds too good to be true, Doug. That's why they wanted to tailor your resume.
That's the only reason why I kept doing it. But I really should have just been like, yeah, guys, I sent in my CV. My CV is my CV. Either take me or don't. But yeah, that was a horrible failure of just trying so hard. And then like the goalpost literally just being changed every couple of days.
I can't beat that. That's just, I think we can all just bathe in the just disaster of that. And just that it like took time. It just keeps stretching out.
You know,
it's not ever over. It's like,
It was the worst because it was one of those ones where like, and you blame yourself as well. Cause I'm like,
right?
If I was just better at like doing improv and like during the interview, just be like, oh, well, what are you talking about? I don't know GIS. I don't need to know that. I'm all about whatever it is that like, cause it was one of those like, so awkward, you know, trying to pivot in the interview and figuring out what they want. And I'm pretty sure they didn't know what they want, but
When you know they didn't know what they wanted. That's
I've
obvious.
Seen people do it though. There are people that have that skill.
I've done that before. I just brag about myself, but it's a roll of the dice, dude. I have been successful in that room before, but it's a roll of the dice. And when you do it, you also roll the dice and you can be an abject failure. Like, oh, you think you failed. Like you can add like, oh, we're never going to talk to you again kind of failure, but it is a roll of the dice.
That whole like idea of you fake it till you make it.
Yes. And you just triple down on craziness.
So I'll do another failure and I'll throw it over to you guys. Similar job stuff. Again, an interview I completely bombed. So I did really good with like my tailored CV, everything like that. And then I talked to some people in the organization and they're like, they call it an arm's length. So it's semi-government, but basically it's sort of a process that you're supposed to follow. And basically it's meant to be like, if you know that process, you can do really well in those interviews because you know exactly what to say. I was like, all right. And then I tailored it exactly to like, they're like, yeah, do the person spec part and do that. And so like I'd like printed out like little handouts and things about like my plans on various things. I had everything there and like I was set to go. I was super prepared. I had a folder. I had like all these examples ready to go. And it turns out they weren't looking at the person spec for the interview. There was another section, which I completely didn't like, hadn't prepared for. And so like, it was worse because like I had stuff in print and there wasn't any way to like pivot from like, oh, here's my example that actually is not the example you're looking for.
Yeah.
Like there was absolutely no way if they had done what I thought they were going to do, I would have killed it. But I absolutely like studied for the wrong part of the test. Basically.
Oh my God. You lived a nightmare. That's so great. These are great.
There was no coming back.
All have a script. They have a script that you have to stay to. It's except it's the wrong script.
Yep, I hit the wrong specifications. And
you're like, what's this guy talking about?
You memorized the monologue for the wrong play, dude.
Essentially, that's how it went.
So good.
But did you sell it good, though? Did you sell it? Like,
no, like it was bad because I was like, oh, yeah, and here. And I was handing them the papers and they're like, nah. And they politely just pushed it away. They're like, no, we don't need that. I was like, oh, well, that's, and that was about like 5 minutes into the interview. Like, that was that point where I was like, oh, well, I know I don't have this. Crap. Good. We got like another 45 minutes of, or like 40 minutes to,
To just do this. Sit and spin.
I really wish I had the balls to just be able to like stand up, because I've had that one or two other times where I'm like, yeah, I know I'm not getting this job. Right. I could just be like, hey guys, we can stop. Like,
yeah, let's get a cup of coffee.
Yeah, we know I'm not getting this job. It's okay. We could just stop. I wish this is that thing you wish you could say, but you never actually do, because you know, that's a lot of fear in there. And like, dude, well, am I going to burn this? Do I actually have this? Am I reading it wrong? But no.
Dude, I did the opposite on one. I had a job interview. They said they wanted somebody who was a specialist in like Chumash archaeology. And that's really specific, right? For like Southern California archaeology. And it was going to be for some sort of TV thing. And I'm like, ooh, this is good. Like this, I have this and this is rare. It's a Zoom meeting, right? And I turn on the Zoom meeting and there's two, like, I don't know, like producers or whatever at the Zoom. So it's them and me. I turn it on and they just have this quizzical look and they look at me and I'm like, hi, I'm Andrew Kinkella. They're like, are you a Chumash elder? They wanted a Chumash elder, right? And I'm like, no, but I am a Chumash archaeologist. And they were just wiggling. They were so uncomfortable. But I was just like, in my brain, I'm like, I'm going to sit here as long. I'm just going to tease this out. You know, I'm just going to like ask questions. And so I just sat there and talked about the Chumash. But they were like, that was precious. I'm like, and they didn't call me back. What?
Really? So
obviously, I should have sued for racism, but I did not.
How did that happen? Like,
I know.
How did they say Chumash elder and you missed that?
No. They just said
they
like,
failed. You didn't fail.
No, they did. But like, I mean, and dude, 2% of me at the time when they asked, it was so over the top. I wanted to say, well, yes. Well, yes. It's so crazy.
You guys, my failures are so completely opposite. Not opposite, but like it's a little bit different. Mine are more like field based versus like interview based type of stuff too.
Oh, I've got like, some field based ones. Don't you worry.
Do you want to do the next segment? Or
I guess, we'll go to the next segment, which I'm sure will be very long. But so we will open with Renee's failures, which we need to get deep into. You know, we'll see if we can make her cry. We'll be back in a moment. Hello and welcome back to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 331. And we have been talking about what losers we are. And Renee has an installment on her own loserdom. So Renee, take it away.
Thank you. I'm such a loser. It makes me feel so much better. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate it. So with my experiences, I mean, I'm gonna say I'm relatively like not as seasoned as my colleagues on this podcast, but
she's calling us old, man.
I know,
she's calling us old.
But Renee, you're in like prime loserdom. I mean, that's like prime right in there.
It's true. It's like I am like not in the beginning of my career and like not the end. I'm in the sweet spot of my career.
You are.
I'm at the point of my career where I can say stuff and not feel bad about it. So essentially, like we're gonna take it back probably about 15 years ago when I was just a young, spry up and coming archaeologist. It was more like I was a spitfire. Really? You don't say. I still am. But even more so, this was where I had no filter and I just said whatever I wanted. And I stood up for myself. I still do, but really pulled back. But essentially, I got fired from the field for just not dealing with shit, basically. We were on a crew and I wasn't jiving really well with the crew at all. And like, it was more like, it was a tough survey. It was really tough. And it was a type of scenario where it was all dudes, no offense, but like this machismo, I'm going to keep going because I am better than you and we don't get breaks and all stuff. Yeah. But I was like, you guys, I am short and fat. I cannot keep up with you guys. This is not okay. What are you trying to prove? This is not cool. They're like, well, you're just not suited for archaeology because you can't keep up with us. And I just, and one of the crew chiefs full time, and I'm not going to disclose the company because that's unprofessional. But, you know, I'm like, well, it doesn't matter because it's a safety thing, number one. And number two, like, I can't keep up with you guys. It's not okay. Like, I would, like, they would get in front of me and, like, not even stop. They would wait for me and they would keep going. And I had it. And I just went off. And they're like, you just have a bad attitude. You don't know what you're doing anyways. You're not in shape. You can't keep up. And literally, I was on session when I got fired. And literally, it was, I got a call from the PI. It's like, hey, just so you know, you're not doing a really good job. And like, we heard that you can't even keep up and all this stuff. And
yeah,
you just got to go. I'm like, what do you mean I got to go? These guys are assholes and I'm not okay with that. Like, we're missing all this archaeology because these guys are trying to out survey themselves. And I wasn't okay with that. And
yeah,
you know, it was a failure on my part for like, I stood up for myself, but not really. I just like kind of let them like steamboat, or was it roll, whatever, roll me over.
Steamroll.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry, my brain's not working. It was just a thing. And, you know, when you're young, you don't really want to say too much because you don't know like your limitations. And
right,
I just said, okay, well, what did I say? Like, you guys are going to fire me. That's great. But just so you guys know, because I, you know, where you're like, oh, well, I'm not going to get the interview, as Doug was saying. It's like, let's just go get some coffee type of thing. I'm like, you know what? What did I say? I said, you know what? You guys are incompetent. I don't have time for this. Clearly, I know what I'm doing, but you two need to, like, the two people need to check themselves. And I'm like, your company sucks anyways. I don't want to work for your piece of shit company anyway. Like, I just, like, went off and I just hung up. And I'm like, I left.
Look at you. See, well, you're way more people of a badass than us. That's pretty good.
No. Well, at the end of the day, are you going to work with him again? Probably not.
I know. That's where you have to, where you have the lit match and you're like, do I burn this bridge or not? And in your case, right, you're like, screw it. And that's, I think that is completely fine. I've had failures in CRM where I wasn't fired, just not ass back. You know, like, was that soft fired?
It's a soft fire. I mean, I got a soft fire. Like, I was in California doing a CRM job, and I'm not going to, it was up in Central California, beautiful place. And it was tough data recovery or whatever. And essentially, like, they didn't like my attitude or whatever, because the PI was really volatile and just like all over the place and somewhat racist. And just, you know, when someone says, if I put a bumper sticker on your ass, does that count as sexual harassment? I'm like, if you have to ask yourself that, 100%. Like,
yeah.
So
God damn.
But I stood up for myself with that. But I went with my mom to Arizona. We're looking at a house to buy. And I got a phone call from the PI. And he is like, so I couldn't hear him. He was really like, he wasn't soft-spoken, but you could tell he was really nervous. I'm like, spit out what you got to say. I'm not dumb. Yeah. What's going on? Like, tell me. He's like, well, you know, I think we're going to go another direction. Because I was like a field supervisor. He's like, well, you know, I'm like, can you just tell me what's wrong? Like, obviously,
yeah, we're becoming like a software company. It's like, what, you're going another direction?
Like, well, yeah, he's like, well, you know, when we have other projects, we'll let you know. I'm like, okay, first off, why don't you just tell me what I did? You don't like my attitude? There you go. So it's just like these cowards not telling me why I got fired. And like my failure on that end of that data recovery was me not standing up for myself more so because I knew what was going wrong. But the fact of the matter is, in CRM, there's like, at the end of the day, the CRM companies, you're just a number to them. You're just a field tech or whatever. They're like, we'll let you go because we have 10 other applicants. You're just a notch on the belt. And I'm like, okay, well. Yeah,
but do they, you know, like, because a lot, honestly, as we all know, there are plenty of CRM companies that are just totally unprofessional. And it's because, I think, you know, having been in this world for quite a while, I think Heather has said this before too, that like CRM companies, there's a huge percentage of them, they're made by a few like archaeology people, like academic people, and they have no freaking business sense. They have no professional sense. And they're just like, yeah, we're just archaeologists. We're just doing archaeology. And it's like, they just don't know how to run a business to save their lives.
100%. You know?
I mean, I've seen the, just not just extreme unprofessionalness, but just like to the point where it's like, you idiots are going to get sued and you're going to lose, like, you know, dangerous situations, right? All that. And it's because they just have no business acumen. And it's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. But like, with all those failures, being young and just like being right. Like take no prisoners type of situation, I just say what I need to say. I learned from those situations. I'm like, okay, Renee, as you're getting older, you got to like hold your tongue. Unfortunately, it sucks. But like in that maturity phase of becoming a professional, like you have to be like, you kind of have to be quiet, which sucks. But like,
mm-hmm. It's a balance.
It is a balance, but as a trained anthropologist, we're known to observe with our eyes and just see like, okay, that's the person I don't want to work with. That's the person I don't want to be
right. Going
forward. Like when I have crews or whatever, it's like, all right, I want to treat people how I want to be treated because of my past like experiences. Yeah. So I don't want them to have failures. And it's your job to coach people so they don't have those types of situations, right? It's like,
yeah.
Okay,
oh, well, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we were talking, I made a list that this will just take me a minute to tick off of other archaeology related failures of mine. So I did a research proposal at one point to you know, work internationally. It was denied like after a while. So I was going to do research, but no, I was going to be the PI, but it was denied. I had several books that I was going to write. One I was going to write that got denied after like several months of working on it. And I had like the first chapter done and all that. It was like all good until it wasn't. And it just was like, it fell apart after a ton of work. I had another time where I was working on a book with two other people. And I ultimately got fired off of working on it because they didn't like what I did. You know, I mean, that was a tough one. That was a tough one, you know, where you, because writing has that creative aspect to it. And it's like they hated your baby, you know, but they did not like it. And I got the email that was like, put your pencil down because you're fired, loser. As a college professor, I tried to get so many gigs before the one I got. I think part of the reason I got my full time job was because I had failed at several others where I'd gotten into the equivalent of like the final four, like the shortlist. You know, I got in a short list and where you do a job talk and all that kind of stuff. And I did not get picked several times. And I was so tired of failing that I was utterly relaxed when I did the job talk for the job that I have, because I just didn't give a shit. You know, I was just like, here you go. Here's what I do. F you. And they, you know, and they loved it because I was so relaxed and I was joking. I was making them laugh, you know, but it was, that's how I got that. And even more recently, I've done part-time jobs in the professor world at other institutions. And it's like, I have to reapply every semester or every year or something. And sometimes I get them and sometimes I don't. And at this point in my career, when it comes to some of those, I literally am like, don't you know who I am? You know, like I do have a bit of that reaction in that one world of college professor teaching.
What I'm an like, ego. Oh my
I know,
God.
I know. But you get to the point in some stuff in a career where I'm like, you're saying I have to send in a resume and really, you know, and I get it. I'm always a team player. I always do it. But in my head, I'm like, I have so much experience in this. Like, come on, friend. But anyway, so there's my list, like, and I could go in deep on any of those, and there's more, but I am a horrendous failure. In my success, I am a horrendous failure.
No, you're not. Well, maybe, but.
I am.
Let's turn it back on your professor stuff. Right. Like, would you say you've ever failed your students?
Oh, no. My joke is much more that, like, it's, yes, I'm very successful in my job, but while being successful in my job, if you look on a list of failures versus, or, you know, wins versus losses, as Doug and I talked about earlier, I have a horrendous list of losses. I have some deep gash losses.
I know, I almost quit because of you.
Right. But I am very successful. Isn't that funny?
It's so funny. Oh my God.
So I was actually, we'll take it even like stupid, like fieldwork mistakes on this one.
Right.
Cause I was thinking about like when Renee was talking fieldwork, I was, it's like, oh yeah, I haven't had so many. Oh yeah. I remember this one. So we're like, so it was not CRM dig. It was a research dig, Hillfort in Scotland. weren't finding much on the hill for it. And they sent three of us and they're like, yeah, basically we're looking for like the entrance coming up, see if we could find the trackway and stuff like that. We're pretty sure, like there's still a debate among us. Like three of us are pretty sure we heard go dig a trench on that side of the fence and not this side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. And actually, yeah, we found a trackway, probably medieval, maybe Iron Age. It was what best archaeology we'd found right there. But it was also like a sort of just a rolling, I don't know what you want to call it, of failures. You know, it was
a house of cards.
Yeah. In our brilliance, we're like, well, you know, if we're going to extend the trench further up where we think this trackway is, we should put the spoil heap behind us. And just a heads up, guys, never put your spoil heap on a barbed wire fence.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, it was like, we were so smart. We were like, yeah, we'll put it behind us so we can always extend our trench. Yeah. And it was fine until we had to backfill. And then like, you're putting in your shovel and you're hitting nothing but a wire. Like it took us about like twice as long as it should have to be able to move that spoil back because we'd put it on there. And then at one point, going back to this side of the fence and that side of the fence, this older gentleman comes by and, you know, he's wearing tweed and looks all very proper. And he's like, oh, yeah, what are you guys doing? We're like, oh, yeah, archaeology. We're looking for this. We explained everything to him. Really great. He's like, oh, okay, that's very nice. And then he goes and talks to our director. Our director comes over and he's like, yeah. So, guys, I'd said dig on this side of the fence. We're like, no, you said that side of the fence. And he's like, yeah, well, that was the landowner of the place you've just put a trench that we didn't have permission for.
I mean, that was cool archaeology,
nice.
Though.
Yeah, that was super nice about it. But yeah, we definitely put a trench on land we did not own.
That's great.
Or have permission for. We did not have permission for it. The other land we didn't own either. But you know, yeah, good times.
Yeah, that's awesome. Not the easiest thing to explain away. I had another failure. This one is not quite a failure, but it was sort of supposed to be, where I was working for a CRM firm once where I could just tell they just didn't like me. You know, and they were, really? And I'm not saying this in some sort of like, oh, they just didn't like. I mean, no, seriously, they did
so
not
hard
want
to believe.
Me there. No, but dude, they did not. But they were trying to fire me. But at the same time, my work was good enough where they would almost roll their eyes like, damn it. He still did it. You know, like they would give me like impossible situations. And then like, I would just sort of find some creative like way to do it. And then they get pissed instead of be happy, you know, like, oh, he made it through that like ring of fire. But it was like, it was an awful place to work, you know, but I did feel, again, like both of you guys were talking about earlier, I wish they would have just gone, hey, we freaking hate you. Just get out of here, you know, but it just went on and on. I finally just kind of left, you know, but it was, you could just feel the tension of they don't like you, you know, so that was our... sort of a soft failure.
I've had a learning experience on that.
Uh-huh.
So I have had one of those where like my boss just decided no, but it was a big enough organization where they couldn't just fire me.
Yeah.
And so they went through the whole process of like a performance review.
Yeah. Oh, then, God.
And then there had to be an outside committee where they brought in someone from HR and someone from a different department and review. And so like, it sucked because at the time I won't go into details because it's quite boring, but it was visa related stuff and my visa was attached to the job. So I was really there, but basically they went through that process and they already knew that process ahead of time. Like we all knew that what the conclusion was.
Right.
And I should have run into that a second time.
Yeah.
And the second time when I knew it was coming, I was able to plan it out. I was able to like give notice, but give like 3 months notice, which was like enough time for me to find a new job, but also like not enough to like, it was just enough time that like they weren't going to go through that process to like get rid of me like 2 weeks early.
Mm-hmm.
So like I knew it, but like, yeah, a bit of learning from my failures. But like, yeah, I've been in that where they start like, you know, your leave gets denied. You start getting like impossible tasks. Everything you do is subpar.
Yes.
No matter like
laughable, you know, degree. See, mine was different than yours because mine was a small company. So they were just unprofessional as hell. It was just different. They just couldn't figure out how to kick me out, you know?
Sometimes it would be nice if you could. I know why you can't.
Yeah. So
I've done all that HR training. I know why you can't have that conversation because then you could get sued and stuff like that.
Right.
But sometimes it is like, yeah, can't we just have that conversation where it's like, hey, this is not working out. Let's like.
I don't like you. You don't like me. Let's just like do something
part
else.
Part relatively amicably.
Yeah. Or just neutral.
Or just, yeah. Or right. like.
Companies were like, they don't want to fire, like if you're full time, they don't want to fire. But here's some like training videos for you to like better yourself. You want some emotional intelligence videos? Here you go. Enjoy that. We're not going to fire you, but just watch these.
Yeah. Oh, man. Anybody got any last ones? Are we good?
I got like it's not quite a failure, but it's like a purpose failure. It's going back to Andrew when you were talking about like. Your TV like
right
interviews and stuff like that. Yeah. There was a while just because like my blog got put on some like top 10 list of archaeology blogs, yada. Mm-hmm. I'd get like a bunch of like over like a period of like 2 years. For me, it was probably a lot. Andrew, you'd probably be like, that's just a normal Tuesday.
Yeah.
I got like half a dozen, maybe eight like inquiries that
that's
like, from, like production companies, they'd be like, oh yeah, we have these various projects. I think this one, the premise was like the Holy Grail or something like that.
Sure.
And trying
sure.
to find
That's
it and
common.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was trying to politely say like, they're like, oh, like crazy like theories and stuff like that. I was like, you know, I could maybe do your like straight man. Like, you know, this is a sort of thing like that.
Man, I've said that so many times. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
And then they got to like, she was like, oh yeah, my boss wants us to go really out there. She's like, yeah, she's like, you know, maybe we could just find someone who's like even schizophrenic.
And like, oh my God.
That. Yeah. Well, no, that was basically like my response at that time was like, so I obviously like 100% failed this. And they're like, yeah, we're maybe looking, they want like a dozen people or some dozen theories. Yeah. I don't know, something like that. And when they said that, I blurted out like, that's really messed up. And like,
yeah.
And then like, there was just like silence on like the interview. And I was like, yeah, I mean like probably not the most professional thing, but also they weren't being very professional with like, they're like, let's just get people who have mental health. And
right. I mean, honestly, I've never heard something that wild. That's crazy.
That's the first one.
Yeah. Well, the show never got made or anything like that. But like, yeah, it was like another like 2 minutes of awkwardness. And then they're like, yeah, we'll call you back.
Right.
Like, yeah, they never called back.
No.
But yeah, it was definitely like, but I'm not sure if I call it a failure as so much as like dodging a massive bullet.
Yeah.
Like obviously I failed in getting the job, but it was like a huge red flag when the casting agent was just like, yeah, we're maybe even going to just get someone who's schizophrenic or something.
It's like a moment of being dumbfounded and like you're sitting there in the room all quiet. It's like crickets. You're like, did they really just say that? Like, should I get up and walk away? Like, this is weird.
I mean, I have more failures, plenty more, but
Doug, you're just a failure. Like,
yeah,
man. Like, when we started this episode, I was like, crap, what do I need to think of? What do
I know,
think
me too.
Of? I was going to do like a really stupid one with like making a map, like a minor failure. And
oh, yeah,
like,
that's Tuesday.
Yeah, I got plenty of other bigger and better ones.
Right. We might even have to do part two at some point with like Heather and Bill because they're going to have a million of them too. Anyway, I think we'll wrap it up. And I just want to say that, hey, look, on this podcast right here, you have three people. All three of us are very successful in what we do, right? Look how much we've failed. So, hey, in the future, if you fail once or twice, just use it as a learning experience. You can be way down and depressed when it happens. I'm telling you guys, I was very lighthearted about this, but a handful of these, I was really sad. You know, I felt really awful on one or two of these, but the sun shall shine the next day. And, you know, I did learn from them. So with that, I bid you adieu, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.
I will add before that goodbye, as Bruce Wayne's dad says, Bruce, why do we fail? So we can learn to pick ourselves back up. End.
End. That's good. End.
That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRMArcPodcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at arcpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.arcpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.arcpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.